Good morning. It's great to be here this morning. I don't know how many of you had the opportunity to come out with us last Sunday morning to the picnic, but we had a great time out there. I was sad that Carrie wasn't able to join us. She had to be at rehearsal. So we ran home for a quick bite to eat, and on the way home, something happened to us that has sort of stuck in all of our minds. We were passing Walmart on our way to our house, and I was watching to see if anyone was going to pull out in front of me over here, because we all know that that happens a lot in front of Walmart. And as I was looking over here, the van next to me started coming over into our lane. And Carrie screams out, and I swerve, and I lay on my horn, and Harper screams out, and I look over, and there's a lady, and she's on her, you know, she's on her cell phone, completely oblivious to the distress that she has caused in our family. And right after that, Harper starts saying, "That lady's not very nice." And she starts saying, "Daddy, that mean lady almost hit us. She tried to hit our black car with her red car." And on and on and on. And later that night, as we were saying our night-night prayers, she prays and thanks God that the mean lady didn't hit us with her car. And now, all week long, I've had this little tiny backseat driver getting in the car going, "Daddy, watch out for the mean ladies. Watch out for the mean ladies." You know, it is a concern to her. It is on her mind. Even though it was a singular occasion in her life, it has stuck with her. And it's caused her to think and to worry every time we get in the car that a mean lady somewhere out there is going to run us off the road. I think we could all agree to feeling like that at some point in our lives. I think we could all agree that the world that we live in is becoming an increasingly more distressing place to live. Every day it seems as though we wake up and are greeted by the latest national and natural disaster. Several years ago when I was in college, I remember waking up late to class and I had to hurry to get ready, and I was rushing through my morning and I didn't turn the news on. I usually would check in on the news. I didn't that morning. And I got in my car, and as I was rushing to school, I was trying to calm myself and to center myself and to think about what was ahead. So I didn't turn my radio on. I come into class and I'm greeted by 24 computer screens all full of this image. And I realized that the world I went to sleep in was drastically different from the world that I woke up in. That moment will forever be burned into my memory. Another moment that I can recall was 4 years later, sitting in our house and watching the news coverage of the disaster of Hurricane Katrina and what it did to the people of New Orleans. And then just a couple of weeks ago, we woke up in the morning and we turn on the news to find what? Horrible images and video coming out of Japan. And we realize that terrible things happen in this world. That every day something seems to go wrong. But the thing is it's not just national and natural catastrophes, is it? We are also faced with things in our news, in our local news, in our backyards. Murder and rape and drug abuse and all kinds of things happening. Poverty, hunger, relationships that are breaking up, families that are tearing apart. Every single day we are faced with the fact that we live in a fallen and broken world. And that pain is such a part of it. Pain is the great human equalizer. I think that probably all of us have experienced it on one level or another. It could be this morning that you are in a dark night of your soul. Maybe you're caught up in an addiction. And every single day it eats at your soul. It wears on your family, it wears on your job, and it wears on all the relationships in your life, and you just don't know how to get out. Maybe you've lost someone close to you. Maybe a person in your life was taken before their time, and you wonder at the injustice of it. Maybe your family is breaking apart. Maybe you're crying out to God to hold your family together and no one seems to care, no one seems to listen. You've tried everything and nothing's working. It could be that you're a single parent and every day you ask yourself how you're going to get by, how you're going to feed your kids, how you're going to send them to school, and above that, how are you going to raise them to be the people that God needs them and wants them to be. We've all had those times where we're at a loss, where we don't know what's going to take place tomorrow, where we've had heartbreaking relationships, We've had struggles, and we have had our downs. If you are in that position, or if you have ever been in that position, Psalm 62 is for you. It was thought to have been written in a time where David was experiencing the heartbreak of his son rebelling against him and trying to take over his throne. He didn't know who to trust. He didn't know where he could turn to. But despite all of those things, despite the unconcern, the unrest, and the ungodliness in this world, despite the fear and the worry and the anxiety that every one of us feel each and every day, we are not without hope. The Bible testifies to one truth over and over and over again, that God is with us and that He is listening and that He will be there to take care of us in our darkest days. That is what David wants us to know. David, in the midst of heartbreak, in the midst of tragedy, he writes about a picture of God, the character of God. And in doing so, I think he gives us all who are experiencing a dark night something to confess, something to believe in. He offers us words of peaceful assurance. The whole psalm reads like a sustained declaration of trust. David understands what it's like. He knows what it feels like to live in a fallen world. I want you to look with me in Psalm 62, verses 3 and 4. David writes, "How long will all of you attack a man to batter him? Like a leaning wall and a tottering fence. They only plan to thrust him down from his high position. They take pleasure in falsehood. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse." We get a picture of David's circumstances. He describes himself as being a leaning wall and a tottering fence. At any moment, something can come through in his life and destroy him. People all around him are betraying him. He doesn't know where he can turn. How many of you have ever felt like a leaning wall and a tottering fence? As though the next bad thing to come your way will just knock you over, will take your breath away. How many of you feel like that right now? David knows what it's like. And the problem is when we experience this pain, when we experience these times in our life like this, the tendency is to withdraw, to take ourselves out of the situation. I worked with a church in Richmond, Virginia several years ago, and I remember I'd interned with them a couple summers, and I'd met the Crouch family. And they were a family I really looked up to, a family that I just loved and appreciated. They were model parents. They had three beautiful boys. And while I was back at school, I got a phone call. Mary had complained of a headache. They took her to the hospital, and less than 24 hours later, she was gone, leaving behind her husband and these three boys. And I remember I just cried, and I thought about how horrible that was. And I just wanted to sleep. I just wanted to not have to deal with it. I just wanted to go away and not think about it and not worry about it and not be concerned. And we do that, don't we? We see injustice in the world. We see things that we probably could do something about, but we turn a blind eye because it is going to cause sacrifice in our life. It is going to be difficult. It is going to cause pain. And so sometimes the temptation is to exile ourselves. But the problem is, as Christians, we cannot do that. Paul wrote to the Corinthians in chapter 11, verse 1. He says, "Imitate me as I imitate Christ." We are to be Christ to this world. We are to, just as God did, live into this world in the greatest humanitarian effort the world has ever known, the salvation of mankind. That is what and who we are to be about, living into this world to help relieve it of its pain. And thankfully, so many of us are doing that. But there's a problem that comes when we do. There's a problem that comes when we live into this world. We begin to be faced with these trials, and we start to think, I need to handle this. I got this. I need to take control. I need to do something about it. I need to make this happen. Other times we build up things in our life, right? We put security measures in place. We surround ourselves with stuff that doesn't mean anything because the world tells us that is how you feel safe. That is how you secure your life. But David warns us against putting our trust in the wrong place. I want you to listen to Psalm 44:6. "It is not in my bow that I trust, nor can my sword save me. It is not in my bow that helps me hunt and bring down game that I feed myself and put my trust in. It is not in my sword and its ability to keep my enemies and the world at bay, but it is only in God that I trust. Psalm 27, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. David cautions us as well in Psalm 62 against giving in to that temptation to put our trust where it doesn't belong. It is in God only that we are to trust. He says in verse 8 and through 10, trust in Him at all times. He doesn't say trust Him just in the good times. He doesn't say just trust Him in the bad times, but trust Him in all times. When we're hurting, when we're down and out, trust in God. When we're living a good life, when we have means coming in, when things are going well for us, we should also trust in Him to put ourselves on the line, to take a step into the world and say, here I am. What can I do to help? We're to trust in God at all times. He continues and he says, O people, pour out your hearts to God. He is a refuge for us. Those of low estate are but a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances they go up. They are together lighter than a breath. Put no trust in extortion. Set no vain hope on robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart on them. He knows the temptation is there. The temptation to be as the world is, to get ahead as the world would have us get ahead. He understands that we are going to want to put our trust in other people. He understands that we are going to want to put our trust in our wealth and in our riches. He says those are not the places for it. Places for our trust is in God. Jesus had a similar message in Luke chapter 12. He said, take care. Be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist of the abundance of possessions. That is a hard message to hear. Because we always want something else, right? And it's a sliding scale. If we're poor and we're hungry, all we think is if I could just have food, if I knew where my meal was coming from tomorrow, I would be okay. And then once we have that, we begin to say, well, if I could just have now a car, if I could just have that, then I would be okay, then I would be set. And then we say, if I could just have my own home, if I could own my own house, then things would be better. If I could just have that new TV I wanted, if I could just have this and I could just have that, and it goes on and on and on, and there's always something that leaves our hearts empty because we're not filling it with the right things. It is in God that we put our trust. He goes on and he says, therefore I tell you, don't be anxious about your life, what you're going to eat, nor about your body and what you're going to wear. For life is so much more than food, and the body is so much more than clothing. And he goes on to paint this beautiful picture of God. He says, God cares so much about the lilies of the field and He provides for them. Look at the birds of the air. God takes care of them. If God cares so much for these little and insignificant things, how much more will He care for those of us who are made in His image? How much more will He look after our souls and take care of us? So don't worry about tomorrow. Cast your care, cast your anxiety, cast all of those things on Him because He is going to take care of you. He says, don't store up treasures here on earth, but store up treasure in heaven. Find peace in me. Finding peace in God is what Psalm 62 is all about. In verse 1, he starts in this way. He says, for God alone, my soul waits in silence. For God alone, my soul waits in silence. And then he seemingly repeats himself in the same sentence in verse 5 when he says, for God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. I don't really like what the English does here. It doesn't really do these verses justice. Because the initial sense we have is that we are to somehow quietly endure. That we are to take it. That we are to not say anything. That we are just to accept what is happening around us. And that we are to wait for God to show up, for Him to come down and do something about it, and then at some point provide refuge and salvation and all of these other things. But that's not what is meant here. When David says for us to wait in silence, it's not a literal verbal silence. Because in verse 8 it says that we are to pour out our hearts to Him. So much of the Psalms are made up of people crying out to God. We're living in this world. We see the wicked generation. Why are you not doing anything about it? And God always says, but I am. I am here. I am listening. And further, this idea of waiting is more of like an expectancy. Because God is now our refuge. He is now our salvation. He is currently providing us with a way to get through this. So what is left? What's left is this idea of a quietness of the soul. An inner peace and stillness that comes with yielding all of our anxieties, all of our fears, and all of our insecurities to God. That is what is meant. In verse 1, he says, "O God, my soul," it's this declaration, right? "My soul waits for you in silence. Though the world rages against me, God, I will rest comfortably knowing that you will take care of me." In verse 5, it's more of a self-encouragement. "I am at peace in you, God, and I pray that I remain that way." Paul in Philippians chapter 4 said, "The peace of God that surpasses all understanding, it will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." God knows that we live in a fallen world. He knows that we're going to face trials and temptations. He knows that things are going to get difficult because we're trying to live as He would have us live. He wants us to be bearers of His light and His grace. And so He reveals Himself to be the kind of God that can instill and provoke the amount of trust and the amount of peace in us that will help us endure, that will help us survive. How does He do that? Verses 2 and then verses 6 and 7 kind of read like, almost like David's confession of who he believes God to be. He says, "He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly shaken. He is my rock and my salvation," verse 6, "my fortress. I shall not be shaken. God on God rests my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock, and my refuge is God." These are some powerful words that he uses to describe God. God is the author of our salvation. He is the rock, the immovable force and foundation upon which we build and operate in our life. He is the fortress that surrounds us and protects us in this world as we live in it on His behalf. And when it gets too much, and when it gets too difficult, it also says that He is our refuge, the place where we go to find peace and to find comfort. He provides us strength in several ways. Very quickly, He provides us strength in our spiritual defense. Romans chapter 8 and verse 35, "Who can separate us from the love of God? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword?" No. In all of these things, we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. He gives us strength in our spiritual weariness. He gives the power to the faint, and to him who has no might, He increases strength. "Even though youth shall faint and be weary and young men fall exhausted, they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles." And finally, He provides a strength in our physical weakness. Paul wrote to the Corinthians and said, "For the sake of Christ, for the sake of Christ, I am content with weakness, with insult, with hardships and persecutions and calamity. For when I am weak, it is then that I am strong." What is God saying? He's not saying that difficult times won't come. He's not saying that these things will befall us. In fact, the very opposite. They will happen very often because we are acting on His behalf. But when they do, He wants us to know that though the world may rage against us, that though our bodies may be afflicted, nothing can remove us from His hand. Nothing can take away our salvation unless we choose to turn our backs on God. And that's the good news, right? That though we lose loved ones, that though terrible things happen, that though we're faced with these natural disasters, we can know that none of them means God doesn't love us. None of them means that He is not caring for us and that one day we will be with Him in heaven. I was struck once by a particular event that Matthew records in chapter 14. Herod has just beheaded John the Baptist. And when the news is brought to Jesus, it says that he was distressed and that immediately he went away to be by himself in a solitary place. Why did he do that? Why later, when he is in the garden, why does he leave his disciples in his greatest hour of need and go off to be by himself? Why does he do that? Because Jesus knows one very important fact, that rest, that peace, that comfort can only be found in God. and in God alone. When is the last time you spent alone time with God? We live in a really busy world. We have deadlines to make. We have people to please. We have soccer games to go to. We have plays to be in. We have jobs that we work at. We have all of these things that take and make so many demands on our life, when the only one that truly matters is spending time alone with God. We could be failing our jobs, we could be failing at school, we could be doing all of these things, but none of that matters if we're failing God. I want you to think about, if the only time you spend with God is when you're in a church service, whether it's Sunday morning, Sunday night, in class, on a Wednesday, you are giving 1% of your time to God. In what other area of your life is 1% ever enough? When is the last time you spent some alone time with God? For just a few minutes this morning, I want us to do that. If you are experiencing a dark night of your soul, if you're experiencing pain in your life, if you're experiencing a storm, I want you to reflect on all the times that God has brought you through it. I want you to reflect on all the passages we've talked about so far that remind us of God being our rock. And I want you to spend some time thanking Him. If you're in the middle of one of these right now, maybe you need to pray with someone else. But I want you to take a few minutes in silence as we reflect on God as our salvation. Be still and know that I am God. I am the Lord that strengthens thee. What a beautiful thought. David closes his psalm in verse 11 and 12 in a powerful way. He says, "Once God has spoken and twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God, and to you, O Lord, belongs steadfast love." I love this passage. It recognizes that God has the power. God is mighty to save. He has the power to deliver you, to provide the peace that you need. And because God is love, He will. I want to say that again. God has the power. He is mighty to save. And because He is love, He will. I want to share a story with you that I heard. Sharon Cohn, who is a lawyer for the International Justice Mission Group, shared a story of Elizabeth. Elizabeth was a girl living in a small village in Southeast Asia. She had just finished her 10th grade exams and was awaiting the results when a woman from a nearby village approached her. She told her about a job that could be had just across the border in a nearby village. Elizabeth had grown up in a Christian home, a devout Christian home, and she wanted to go to Bible college. But she knew that that would place an enormous financial burden on her family. And though she was afraid to travel, she agreed to take the job. And then what happened next is just a horror story. It's a horror story that is repeated over and over again, thousands of times, every single day. Elizabeth was sold to a trafficker, and the trafficker then took her and sold her to a brothel. And the brothel owner came to her and said, "You owe me for all of these sales, and every day you are going to be subjected to repeated sexual assaults until you can win your freedom." Elizabeth was devastated and held out for 3 months. For 3 months she held out through beatings and all kinds of abuse until she was literally weak and could hold out no longer. She was devastated. She said she wanted to die and thoughts of suicide ran through her mind. She would try to get other girls in the brothel to pray with her, but they would just laugh and taunt and say, "God can't hear you in here." But she said, "I believed. I believed, and every single day I prayed to God for deliverance. Every single day I prayed that He would remove me from this place before my first year anniversary." Well, less than a year later, an undercover agent for IJM was visiting this brothel looking for minors and other trafficked women. Elizabeth overcame her fear and confided in him her desire to escape. And based on the information that she was able to provide, they came in, conducted a raid, and rescued nearly all of the girls in that brothel. An unusual sight was found on the day of the raid. on the wall in the room where Elizabeth was daily subjected to all of these assaults, things that are too horrible for us to imagine and don't even want to imagine, were written these words. Elizabeth had written the words to Psalm 27, 1 and 3. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Who shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat me up, my adversaries and my foes, it is they who will stumble and fall. And though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war rise against me, I will be confident. That was her verse. That was what sustained her through nearly a year of things that we cannot and do not want to imagine. Every day she would read this and repeat this to herself. After she was rescued, someone asked her to share this verse, and she said, no. No, I don't read that verse anymore. I have a new verse. That's what I read in the brothel. Today, my verse is Psalm 34. I sought the Lord, and He answered me, and He has delivered me from all of my fears. What an amazing story of faith, of someone putting their faith, putting their hope in God, and being rewarded. It may not come today and it may not come tomorrow, but if we cast our fear, if we cast our worry on Him, He will listen. Brothers and sisters, I want to encourage you this morning to cry out to God. If you are in pain, if you are in a dark night of your soul, I want you to cry out to God. And may the God of all mercy, grace, and love fill your soul with peace and with calm assurance and love. This morning, I want you to know the invitation is open in any way that you need it. But I would especially like to ask if there are those of you who are in pain, if those of you who need the prayers of this church, whatever the reason is, whatever trouble you're facing, if you need the prayers of this congregation, please come while we stand and sing.